Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to It Factor Entertainment Radio, your host. Yeah, you're the host, the true host of the show, Wayne Benitez. I'm flying solo today because Tommy Two Chips is out with a flu. So, ladies and gentlemen, we got a special guest on here. He's a legend from Arrested Development. Give it up for Speech.
What's up, fam? What's up?
Hey, what's up? Hey, Speech, welcome to It Factor Entertainment Radio, my brother.
Nice, nice. It's good to be on here, brother. How y'all doing?
Doing good. Can't complain at all.
Yeah. Good, good. Love that. Love that.
Yes. And I noticed that your tour has been doing very well, definitely. Your tour is all over America and other countries, definitely.
Yeah, man. We've been, literally traveling the whole world. We've been throughout Australia. We brought the New Year in Japan, went to New Zealand, Europe, all throughout Europe, France, you know, Germany, UK, Ireland, you know, just all over the place. It's been great. It's been great. This year, we're starting off mellow, which I like. I'm just at home, like, working on other projects. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know, definitely know what you mean. Yes. Who was your influence before starting Arrested Development?
You know, before we started AD, I would say people like Run DMC, LL, Cool J, Treacherous 3, Grandmaster Flash, Sugar Hill Gang, Mantronix, you know, stuff like that, Soul Sonic Force, Afrika Bambaataa. But then, you know, like, once we had started Arrested Development, there was groups like, of course, Public Enemy and De La Soul, the Jungle Brothers, Tribe Called Quest, and, you know, Moni Love, and Salt and Pepper. Like, all of that influenced us and fired us, you know, stuff like that.
Yes. And can you tell me about Mr. Window?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's like one of our big, in fact, I think it's our biggest song to date. And it's, you know, one of those tracks where it was really a true story. We were, before we blew up, at least, we were chilling out at the studio all the time, and homeless people would come through. It's on Edgewood. Our studio back then was on Edgewood in Atlanta, and homeless guys would come through, and we would invite them in, we'd hang out, we'd just build and talk about life, politics, women, everything. And, you know, we really had good friendships with these brothers. And, you know, so I was just inspired to write a song about them because they had a very free mindset. Like, they wasn't trapped by all the trappings that a lot of us are trapped by in the world. I mean, they were very off the grid, and they can see humanity for what it was, and they saw value in things that we a lot of times don't see value in, and vice versa. You know, they saw trash as things that a lot of times we look at as so valuable. So I was just amazed at, like, their whole energy. You know, and so, yeah, Mr. Window is like a dedication to that whole experience.
Yes, what was it like winning 2 Grammys also for the first time?
It was crazy. You know what I mean? Like, just, you know, you grow up watching the Grammys. At least I did. I grew up watching the Grammys. It was a dream, you know, just to be on that stage, period, and to even be in the crowd. So for us to not only be in the crowd, not only be nominated, but then to win our first Grammy ever off our first album, and then to win another Grammy, and especially Best New Artist, was just amazing. Like, you know, we really was just blown away. It was surreal. It was like a dream. You know what I mean? And not only that, like, a lot of these, a lot of the award shows happen in the same season. So, like, we was doing a lot of award shows. So the Grammys was just the top of the heap. But we was doing a lot of other ones, and we was winning a lot of awards. So it was a lot of just, you know, crazy life going on at that time. And it was buck wild. It was, like, amazing, you know, really amazing.
Definitely. I still remember that day when I was watching the Grammys, and it was one of those moments also to see a well-known African-American group making history, getting a Grammy also from the hip-hop industry, definitely.
Yeah, we felt great about it, you know, because for us, our music is revolutionary. You know, it's not light music in a sense. It's like, listen to what we're talking about, what I'm writing about, and generally speaking, it's on some pretty revolutionary, let's change things type of subject matter. So, you know, for that to get recognized on that level was cool. And I was really proud of, you know, the role that we play in hip hop, and especially at that point, you know, I was just very proud of that. And just, yeah. And I knew that it was a big achievement for us as Black people, because, you know, the music was diverse and it celebrated our ancestors. It celebrated, you know, uplifting us and, you know, talking about all of those things. And that's, you know, when that gets a Grammy, that's a good look.
Yes, definitely. Definitely a powerful statement. And what you had in Tennessee also told a good story also, the song Tennessee also.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. The Tennessee will forever be one of my most important records. And, you know, I was born and raised in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but I would spend all my summers in Tennessee with my grandmother. And so my grandmother passed away of a heart attack, and so the whole family went down to Tennessee to celebrate her life. And my brother was there. I had an older brother, Terry, who's 7 years older than me, and he was there. And, you know, my mom, dad, everybody was there. And then my brother Terry died that same week. And it just tore us up, man. And it tore me up. And the last place I saw both of them was in Tennessee. And so that was like our first single. It was spiritual. It was, you know, everything about that was timely. I always felt like when people pass away, they leave you with something that you can take. They leave you with a gift, and whether it's something spiritual or personality driven or anything. So my brother and grandmother left me with an amazing gift, and that was the success of my dreams, you know, and Arrested Development. So it was amazing.
Yeah, definitely one of those greatest songs, definitely, that take you to another place, basically.
Yeah, man, definitely. I mean, and people love it. I mean, this has been, we dropped that in 91. So, like, gosh, you know what I'm saying? That's been a minute from now, almost 30 years. So, you know, for fans to still get into it the same way they did back then, like, it literally feels like I'm time traveling sometimes. When we do live shows, it's so hype, it's so right, that it feels like we're still rocking back in the 90s. So, like, that's the kind of love we get when we do live shows. So it's like, it feels amazing to hear that music. And it still holds the test of time, too. Like, people love it. And they actually, young people miss it. They like, man, I wish I was born in that era where I could get that kind of lyricism and that type of vibe, you know. So it's really cool.
Right. Definitely one of those times that had basically music that is front of hip hop, basically, that was on top.
Yeah, man, it was incredible. It was an incredible moment. Incredible moment.
Yes. Can you tell me about Everyday People also?
Yeah, that joint was our third single. And, you know, that was a surprise because we had another version of that song on our album, and I loved it, but I had now become known for like a melodic style of rhyme because nobody had done it before me. And so I was like becoming known as that type of vibe with Tennessee. It had that type of energy. And actually, no, People Every Day was our second single. And so I really wanted to follow up Tennessee with that type of melodic style. So I changed, I did a remix to the song and added like some reggae energy to it and the whoa and all of that. And it just turned it into a monster. I mean, they're like just such a big party song. Like people send me footage from Brazil. They send me footage from China, and Africa, everywhere, you know, New Orleans. You know, it's just always a party, man, when that song comes on, and it's just such a blessing. I'm so grateful.
Yes. And I still remember it was actually playing at, even when I was going to NFL games, like during that time, like either the Redskins was playing the Giants right there in D.C., and it came on basically, and the players and everyone basically was dancing to the song basically.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I got footage of people marching down the street in New Orleans, you know, during the Essence Festival, and black people rocking with the big bands and all of that, and they're playing People Every Day. I got footage, you know, all over the world. It's just like, it's just so encouraging, you know what I mean? It's like, and especially for me as a lyricist, but also as a producer, because, you know, I know that track still goes in, like, to see, you know, people that are my idols, like Jazzy Jeff, still rocking those joints, and like the place goes nuts. You know, Snoop Dogg, you know, backstage somewhere and puts it on, and his dudes go nuts. So it's like everybody really celebrates the music, which is cool.
Right, and definitely the new generation is so knowledgeable about old school music more than ever, basically, and they wish they was basically in that era, basically.
You know, from my experience, the new school that I meet, they're not knowledgeable. I wish they were, you know. So the ones that come to our shows, they're all the way down. Like, they get it. But I'll meet so many people, and not only do they not know Arrested Development, but they don't know Run DMC. They don't know Public Enemy. They might have heard the name, but never can't recall a song. And, like, for me growing up, when I was in my 20s, man, I knew so much Marvin Gaye, and I wasn't around when he started dropping his first songs or anything. But I knew Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, Earth, Wind & Fire. I knew all of that. I knew all the original rap, you know. So, you know, Crush, Cold Crush, and, you know, Treacherous and all of that stuff. And it was like I was so much more of a studier of music. Like I knew all of the Blue Note jazz artists. Like just, you know, we just studied music, studied it, especially the history. So, you know, I don't know. It's, to me, a different energy. But our fans, the ones that actually come to the shows, they're definitely on point, and they love it. They miss the fact that they weren't born in that era.
Yes, it was music was like basically on a social level, like it felt like a socialism basically, understanding the, you know, what's going on in today's society, still the day, basically.
No doubt
like
about it. I mean, that's
movement.
What our music is
right.
All about.
Exactly. And what are your memories of Baba O.J.?
Oh, man, we miss that brother so much. You know, Baba's a unique man. You know, he's not like most men that you see in, you know, he died at age 86, 87, and, you know, he was the kind of young, had a young spirit but an old body. You know, he was very lively. He loved to roller skate. He loved to party. You know, he loved women. He loved, you know, he was spiritual, but he was crazy. He reminded me of, you know, your down south elder. You know, he cussed you out in a minute, but he also was very introspective and deep when he wanted to be. So it was like very, I don't know, it's a certain type of spirit that you just don't see every day. And the fact that he would hang out with young people and be willing to share his knowledge with anybody who would ask, or even if you didn't ask, it was just a different type of spirit, man. And I really, for me, I'm saddened by the world not knowing that generation as much as they should, because when that generation dies, you know, he's passed away. He passed away the day after my birthday last year. But when that generation dies, there's a certain special work ethic, worldview, hustle, love, community, sense of community that just dies with it, man. I don't think it'd ever be the same, because even the grandmothers now, they're not the same. Like the young grandmothers right now, they didn't have those same struggles that Bob OJ's generation had. They didn't have that same straight up in your face oppression like they had. And you know, it's just a different type of human being that it made. And I'm really, you know, hoping that people that have their elders that are still alive and spend some time with them and get as much as you can. There's an old saying, quote that says, when an old person dies, a library burns to the ground. And I feel that way with my man Baba.
Yeah, that's true, definitely. And it's true that they also say that it's not that many big mamas like it used to be in the family.
Nah, it's not like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's a different energy.
And what was it like to have the top soundtrack in the movie Malcolm X, the Revolution song?
A dream come true. It blew my mind. You know, Spike Lee literally at that time was my favorite black director. And I, you know, watched his movies and brought me to tear up. I was so moved by his movies, you know, School Days and you know, On and On, Do the Right Thing, so on and so forth. So it's like just even be able to rap with him about our music was just blow away material. But then not only that, to follow up Do the Right Thing with an Arrested Development record on Malcolm X, the X film, you know, Do the Right Thing had, in my opinion, one of the best hip-hop songs ever, and that was Fight the Power. And that song with Public Enemy, the Bomb Squad, it's just absolute brilliant. And so we had to follow that up. We didn't touch that song, but let me say we put our foot in it, and I feel like we did a great song. And Revolution is, you know, it's a great song. It rocks today. We do it all of our shows all over the world, and it goes in. And I'm just really proud of the legacy, you know, to be able to work with such a great director, one of the best of all time for blacks, and then also for us to be able to lay it down like we did.
Yes. And what's your thoughts now with all this police violence and police killing innocent black and brown people, and also with Donald Trump making America great again, all of these people wearing his hats and causing all types of racism and other acts?
Man, the police violence, I'll start with that. It literally made me cry, man. I mean, just to see the senseless killings and to see the hatred that America has been taught to have towards its own citizens, black people, it's absolutely senseless and diabolical. And with each killing, I mean, it would just tear me apart, because you could see it on film. It's not like we thought somebody killed somebody unjustifiably. We saw it, and the accountability just isn't there. So I did a special, it's a mini documentary called Nigga Factory, and it's on YouTube right now. You can go check it out at brotherspeech.com. And I address the issue of where racism really comes from and why it's so deeply embedded in our society. So it's a deep documentary. I'm about to release part two. I got part one. It's a mini doc, so it's about 12 minutes long. I definitely want all the listeners to go check it out. It's at brotherspeech.com. Just push the play button. But anyway, it addresses why these police do this, why they feel we're dangerous, even if our backs are turned to them, why they feel we're dangerous, or why they feel that they are entitled to kill somebody who's not even posing a physical threat to them when they're black. It goes into some very deep mentality conditioning that we really have to be aware of, and we have to start to dismantle it, because our kids' lives and our lives are at stake. And that's what the police brutality showed me. The Donald Trump situation is, to me, just an extension of what I just said. His racism is very real. It's very apparent. And he is just carrying out on an executive level the same white supremacist agenda that is basically in the fabric of America. He's carrying it out, and he's carrying it out in a more bold and straightforward way than a lot of other politicians do.
Exactly. America wasn't ever great. And
no, not at all. I mean, America really has to humble itself. And the people of America who say that it was great at any point, it's only because of their ignorance that they say that. They must not be aware of, or they're purposely not aware of, the evil and the atrocities that were happening throughout this country's history that still have to be rectified and redeemed.
Exactly. Yes, definitely Black Lives Matter every day, all day.
And see, you know, it's funny, like for us, I agree, first of all. And then second of all, for us to even have to say Black Lives Matter, like that's an obvious thing. You know, that should have been established when America was basically founded in 1776 and Thomas Jefferson was saying all men are created equal. And the truth is, we should have known it even before that, but the reality was, is even when he was saying that, he had 175 slaves. He wasn't treating them in any way like humans, and it's always been a hypocrisy. So for us to even have to say Black Lives Matter in 2017 and 18 and 19, it's like, it's crazy. It's absolute insanity, and you know, our white brothers and sisters in this world have to really examine what they are missing as far as their own history and the evil atrocities that have happened from their people, and start to dismantle it and get it out of their system.
Yes, that is so true, definitely. People got to stay woke, basically.
Yeah, they got to stay woke. You know what I'm saying? They got, and our white brothers and sisters got to get woke. They got to understand what's been happening. There's good books out there. Like one is called White Fragility. That's a great book. I recommend it for all my white friends, and I have numerous white friends. And I tell them, even though we're friends and they're not purposely racist in any way, I still tell them, you need to read this, because there's things that's just ingrained in you that you wouldn't even know you have. So any white listeners listening right now, there's books out there that can help you. But in essence, America has caused you to have a sickness that you may not even be aware of if you're white, and you need to learn about it and then start to heal, because it's real. I don't even blame whites to an extent to have this sickness, because it's been taught to them since they were young kids that they're superior to other people, that the world revolves around them, that everywhere they are the masters, they are the kings of it all. And so when they see movies where it's portraying the Middle East or portraying Africa, and you got white people playing the roles, they don't find that strange. But they need to find that strange. They need to be like, oh, that doesn't make sense. This is Africa. Why are we all up in the picture? What's going on here? You know, this is Egypt. Why are we, this is ancient Egypt. Why are we the main characters in this film? Or so on and so forth.
Exactly, yes. Exactly. And then also you have some of the bigotry when they were displaying about the movie, you know, the Black Panther comic book movie from Marvel. And yes.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, many white people wouldn't come out to see it during the times that we was going out to see it. They waited until after it was sort of over for us, and then they went to go see it. I mean, like, you just, the racism is so embedded. It's so much a part of American culture. It really should be the number one issue of all politicians, no matter what side of the aisle they're on, because it's the number one issue in this country.
Exactly. And they definitely don't need to make a mockery of it or trying to be so fake about it when it's time for them to be elected or get in office.
Not at all. I mean, I was just seeing an interview with Cory Booker on The Breakfast Club. I didn't see the whole thing, but I saw a little bit. And Charlamagne had asked him, you know, what is your plan for black people? And he couldn't answer. And the reality is he's black. I'm sure he's a cool dude. I've never met him. But none of the politicians are prepared to answer what they need to do for the black vote. And that's just an amazing reality. They don't even have a plan, you know. So they got to start going to the drawing board and coming up with ideas of what they want to do for black people.
Right. There's a couple like Bernie Sanders and Tulsi Gabbard, and they basically put progressives and socialism also along with Andrea Castillo, also a socialist, and they want to smear their own party, smear them right there because they don't believe in selling out to billionaire corporations and stuff and for the people and stuff, and they go right after their religion, like, oh, she's they have a problem with her being Hindu running for president or Samoan and like this. And it's like, why is the Democrat regime and even the mainstream media belittling her as like it's some type of racism and stuff?
Yeah, it's crazy. I agree. I mean, in the socialism platforms that, you know, like Bernie was what I think he called himself, a democratic socialist or something like that. And, you know, Cortez, I like her energy. She's got a great vibe. And, you know, it's a lot of really new, fresh blood. And I think it's beautiful. I think, you know, it's time for some major changes. And I really hope that they're able to make it far. I know I'll be voting. I always do, though. I believe in voting. And I vote for the best candidate that's on the ballot, and then I try to vote for what's going to help us the most, and so on and so forth. So yeah, man, it's important.
Yes, it definitely is. Definitely. Also, can you tell me about your latest albums?
Yeah, we've been dropping music consistently since 2000, so we got some really incredible music. It's absolutely amazing. And, you know, we tour the world with it. I mean, we sell out joints all over the world. So the world is already up on it, but America needs to get up on it. And this is home for us. So it's ironic, but it's the real deal. And we got a new album we just dropped called Craft and Optics. And it's banging. I love it. It's totally different than a lot of the stuff you're hearing right now, but that's what we wanted to do. That was on purpose. It's, you know, it's just a great record. I feel like it's just got a great energy.
Yes, definitely. And what you have to think about, what you have to say about the new generation of artists like Migos and et cetera?
I think that there needs to be, well, here it is. If there's not going to be balance, then I feel that it's dangerous, because the messages are usually about drugs, strip clubs, money, and violence. But if there's going to be a lot of balance, and a whole lot of balance, not just one or two other type of artists, but a whole, like it was back in the early 90s and the late 80s, where you had N.W.A. coexisting with Public Enemy, coexisting with Tribe Called Quest, Arrested Development, Hammer, Young MC. I mean, it was just everything and everything, you know, everybody and everything in between. So you had booty music from Miami, you had gangster music in L.A., you had conscious music in New York in the South, you had dance music from New York. So you, to me, all of it was on the charts, all of it was on tour, all of it was doing good. That's not the case right now. So right now you got some conscious artists. Nobody knows who they are in the mainstream. You got only groups like the Migos or Cardi B or artists, I should say. You know, that's where it's dangerous. If you only got that message resonating all the time, every day, all the time, you are creating a worldview for an entire generation. There was somebody that said a quote, give me the song, let me write the songs for a nation, and I don't care what the lawmakers do. And I'm paraphrasing the quote. So their point is, if you give me the songs, I got the nation. I don't care what the lawmakers do. I got the entire nation. And I believe that. The songs, the music, the artistry is the key. People think that it's mirroring the world. It's not true. It is telling the world what to do. It is creating the reality for the world. When Obama was in the White House, he wasn't initially ready to say that gay marriage was cool. He was willing to give them equal rights, but it wasn't cool. The whole entire nation was pretty much on that same tip. Obviously not gay people, but pretty much on that same tip. But as television started to show more gay marriage, show more gay relationships, so on and so forth, the whole nation started to change their opinion on the issue. It's the same difference with anything. So my point is that when the music is talking about brothers killing brothers, dogging the sisters, calling them H's and B's and all of that, and selling drugs and talking about riches and all of that, that's what everybody, I know it's not everybody, but that's what so many people want to get on that tip, and that's what we're seeing. So we got to be able to have way more diversity. I mean, like, way more diversity. And if we get back to that, then I'm cool with Migos. I feel like they have a right to be on the tip that they're on. But there needs to be a ton of other stuff balancing all of that out, or else it's an agenda. That's like a campaign to wipe out black people's culture, real black culture. Now, I ain't talking about black culture like twerking and all of that. I'm talking about family and values and history and dignity and all of these things. It wipes all of that stuff out.
Exactly, yes. That is so true. Yes. Speech, we're about to run out of time here at It Factor Entertainment. On radio, you can come back anytime
good,
to the show, my brother. Yes.
No doubt, man. Thanks for the love, and thanks for the push. We got everything that people want to know about the Nigga Factory. My documentary is on brotherspeech.com, and so is the music. So, man, thanks a lot.
All right, no problem, my brother. Ladies and gentlemen, that was two-time Grammy Award-winning Porter's artist, Speech of Arrested Development. If you want to download this, it's right up at Facebook fan page at Wrestling It Factor Radio / It Factor Entertainment Radio. Or you can hit up at blogtalkradio.com facebook.com/wrestlingitfactorradio. This is Wayne Benitez signing off. Later.